You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. If you are, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. And I hope you come back, make a habit out of it. It's a really good habit to get into, and a lot of folks around this world have the habit. And if you just got to have a habit, that's a good one. All right, a couple of things very interesting in the news. I guess you probably are familiar with both of these items by now, but there is a report that's circulating now on the internet that Google Earth has photographed Atlantis at the bottom of the ocean, and apparently Google Earth is saying that's not the case. We haven't photographed Atlantis. But what they have photographed and what you can see in the pictures or in the picture, and this is located just out in the ocean west of Morocco, but it looks like an ancient city. It looks like what we see in satellite photographs of old ancient cities, you know. And looks like it's double-walled. It looks like there's a road in and a road out. And for all the world, does not look like a natural feature. It looks like a city, an old one, an ancient one, on the ocean floor. I doubt it's Atlantis, but we'll ask our guest about that here in a little bit, but it's certainly interesting to say the least. Also, there is the story about, in addition to Atlantis, there is the story of the Lulin Comet. Now, the Lulin Comet is a very interesting comet. It's green. It's giving off this green color. As far as they know, it's the first time it has come through our solar system. That's what they're saying. What was interesting to me was the story about the size of the atmosphere around this comet. They said it was Jupiter-sized. And the reason it's green is because of the gases in its atmosphere. Well, I find it interesting that a comet has an atmosphere. I didn't know they did, but this one apparently does. And not only does it have an atmosphere, it is Jupiter-sized. Now, that is a serious comet. Folks, you don't want to forget that we have a drawing coming up on March the 2nd. March the 2nd, all of our subscribers in our members area will be entered automatically into this drawing, and we'll have our producer draw a name out of the box, and the winner will get a hand-woven tapestry, beautiful hand-woven tapestry from Urcos Island down in Peru. This is being sponsored by Expeditions TV. That's Jerry Wills. You're familiar with him, and you'll get to see in the upcoming break. You will get to see the tapestry, because it's in that upcoming break. When we come back from this break, we're going to be talking with Marshall Masters about things to come. We'll be back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Just a real quick note before we begin talking with Marshall Masters, and I don't want to take up too much time, but just to bring you up to date, you know, we did have a rather massive technical issue last night, and there were people who wrote to me today and said, "Oh, where's the latest show?" they were going through withdrawal because they don't get to listen to the live show, and I appreciate them doing that. I don't appreciate them going through withdrawal, but I appreciate them certainly for writing to me and being concerned about it. We had an ongoing attack last night. You might remember some time back when we had someone that got into our router and messed things up. Well, they did it again, even though we had encoded it and password protected it and changed everything. They did it again. That's what was going on last night. And it affected the video rather severely. And it also affected the software that records the both the video and the audio for the latest show. So we were not able to record those. We were just able to stay live. And we did do that. Anyway, that has been remedied. And tonight, things are pretty much back to normal. We hope. We think things have been cured. My guest this evening is Marshall Masters. Marshall Masters is a former science and technology features producer for CNN and for the Texas cable network, TNN. He continues to hold the record for hosting the longest-running cable TV computer software review feature. He's been a freelance technical writer. He opened and operated a tour business specializing in tours of Russia. He is a co-founder of Your Own World USA. It's a publishing company. And he has appeared on several television shows dealing with global changes. He is also the publisher of something I know you have heard of. You have heard of the Colbrin Bible. Well, Marshall Masters is the publisher of the Colbrin Bible. Now, I could go on and on, but I think you get the picture. So, Marshall, welcome back to the show. We're glad to have you.
It's a pleasure to be back, Kevin.
Marshall, let's begin with the Colbrin Bible.
Sure.
Because it's got so much information in it that's related to other things we're going to talk about here tonight. You say that the Colbrin Bible is not written by the victors, and you say it is not inspired by God. So what is it?
Well, the Colbrin Bible is actually an anthology, and it's a collection of different books. Hello, are we there?
We're listening.
Okay, I'm just getting feedback from your system. The Colbrin Bible has, we're having...
Probably because you're using Skype.
Yeah. Why don't you bring me in on the fallback number?
All right, I guess we can do that. All right, let me cue up some music to play.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I tell people about Skype, and they never believe me till they get on the air with it. All right, here we go.
Time is such a wasted cure, and I'll be sure to tell you when you don't have any more. So don't be sad or over with, I'll still be glad I got this song. In your sweet memory, it keeps me sane, it teaches me how not to be. I've been gone for way too long.
All right, we are back. We have Marshall Masters with us. Marshall, let's give it a go. What's the deal with the Colburn Bible? What is it?
Okay, the Colburn Bible is approximately about a 3,600-year-old anthology, and it's a collection of books.
Okay.
And it's in two parts. The first part was written by the Egyptians, and that was about 3,600 years ago. This was right after the Exodus, and it was part of something actually at the time was called the Great Book. And the Great Book was the Egyptian version, if you will, the 9/11 report that we did after 9/11. They really wanted to understand how they got whooped. And this really dealt with the God of the Hebrews. And they felt that the God of Abraham was not the God of the Hebrews that got them through, but that was a lesser God. And so they really wanted to leapfrog the Hebrews and get directly to the God of Abraham. And so they began the most ambitious anthropological, sociological study of the time. And throughout the breadth of their trading realm, they were out there, and while they're scribes and record keepers were doing the books, you know, counting the bricks and making payroll. They were at the same time finding time to interview elders and folks of great wisdom, and they brought a lot of folklore. It went into a very large work. It was about the size, actually, of a modern encyclopedia called The Great Book, and that's in the Colburn. It does reference itself originally as The Great Book, and part of that survived over time thanks to the Phoenicians who got it all the way up to Great Britain. Great Britain towards the end of the Bronze Age was kind of like a Saudi Arabia of tin, and they were mining and shipping a lot of tin down into the Middle East. And so the Phoenicians were taking things up in exchange for tin back, and one of the things that made it up there was the Colburn. The ancient Celts embraced it, liked the wisdom a great deal, and then the original works were kept in the Glastonbury Abbey, which was founded about 37 years after the death of Jesus. And then at that time, the Celts created a book called the Cold Book. It was an ancient wisdom text of their own. And then after the Glastonbury Abbey was set afire, it was destroyed, the surviving priests took what they could gather together of the manuscripts into hiding, and then those remaining manuscripts were cobbled together and formed what is now known as the Colburn Bible. We call it the Colburn Bible to honor the Phoenicians. And the reason why is the term Bible. There's a Bible for everything. There's a fishing Bible. There's a cooking Bible. There's a this Bible and that Bible. Bible is just simply a way to say that a work is authoritative and comprehensive. And so, but the term Bible comes from Biblos, which actually roots back to the Phoenician home port there in Lebanon.
Now, you said that this book was originally written by the Egyptians.
Scottish secret societies kept it in the north of Scotland, and they kept it secreted away because there was, like many other ancient texts that were kept away and secreted so they wouldn't be destroyed for political reasons. And in World War One, you know, over the years, it was translated out of the original tongues, and then it remained largely in Old English, kind of like the English of Shakespeare. And then after World War One, it was converted by this secret society into what they call Queen's English. And then it was finally released in about 1992 by one of the remaining brothers of this small community. And it was initially published it made its way out in New Zealand, and then we found it. We obtained a copy of the text, and we published it. So this is, it's like the Bible. You don't copyright the Bible. The Colburn Bible, it's an ancient text. And so it's a public domain thing. We add value to it with an indexing system, with the alphabetical index, with the citation system, with some other historical information so that it's easy for people to use. But in the final analysis, the Colburn was given and preserved for countless generations by people who wanted to save that knowledge. And we're just doing the same thing, getting it out there, because it has a lot of prophecies that deal with this point in time that are coming true. And it was actually the what prompted the release, what brought the manuscript out of hiding, was the fall of the Soviet Union, which is actually very specifically prophesized by the ancient Egyptians. And it was rather brilliant. They said that a nation, a large nation with the largest navy in the world, would be rotten at the core and collapse suddenly. Well, that was the Soviet Union. And a lot of people don't realize, they think America had the largest navy in the Cold War. No, the Russian navy was a third larger. It was massive. It's just that they had a different emphasis in their fleet of cruisers and submarines and other ships. They didn't follow our model of, you know, the aircraft carriers. But in terms of sheer naval numbers, they were massive when they collapsed, and they collapsed quickly because the country was essentially painted rust, and the paint chipped away, and that was it. So that's what brought it out. The Colburn Bible prophesizes the rise of radical Islam, so that there would be a faith that would emerge that talks about peace but brings war to all four corners of the globe. Islam talks about peace. Christianity talks about love. Very different. So when you read it, the thing that amazes you is the wisdom that is in there. If somebody says to me, "I read it over the weekend," I know they're full of it.
Because, I have read it, but you cannot read it over the weekend.
12 books in the Colburn, and you can spend a year just reading one book at a time, and then you think about it, because the knowledge is so dense, so incredibly wonderful. And that's the experience that I have with it.
All right, now, you said the Egyptians originally are the people that are responsible for writing the Colburn.
Well, the first part of it, we call that the Egyptian text of the Bronze Book.
All right. Now,
and then the second part of it is what we call the Celtic text of the Cold Book.
Yeah. All right, now, does anything in this book, in the Colburn, talk about Atlantis?
Yes, it's mentioned. There's a book for those that really want to get very heavily into the Planet X, Atlantis connection, the Ten Plagues of Exodus, which is attributed to previous flybys of Planet X, other disasters that we talk about, Noah's Flood, the Great Deluge. And this is all discussed at length in the Colburn Bible, and it's documented in the Planet X Colburn Bible Connection by Greg Jenner, and people can get that through the site. So he's got he's got that in that book. It connects all the dots. Mm-hmm. And gives people that historical background. The focus really is that it's they talk about, the ancient Egyptians talked about an object they called the Destroyer. The ancient Celts referred to the same object in their folklore, but they called it the Frightener. And both the Egyptians and the Celts predict its return for about this time. And that was the reason why we really got interested into the text. But also I saw other aspects of it as well. There's a tremendous amount of ancient wisdom in there about how to create a set of bylaws, if you will, for a small survival community. And in this regard, I have to say that the ancient Celts have I like their approach to it better than the Egyptians. The Egyptians tend to be authoritative, you know, boom. Whereas the Celts take a more community-based, a more personal responsibility-based approach to it. But still the same. There's a tremendous amount of wisdom that comes from both of these. And what you really realize is that when we think of these ancient societies, we think of them as warlike and barbaric and what have you. But actually, in some respects, they were ahead of where we're at right now.
All right. Now, they talk about Planet X or Nibiru. They call it the Destroyer or the Frightener. We've only got 1 minute until break. So let me just kind of set it up this way. When we come back from break, I want us to talk about Planet X or Nibiru, and I want us to talk about what these people said in the Colbran about this planet, the Destroyer or the Frightener, and I'd like to know why they call it the Destroyer. Why do they call it the Frightener? And if it really is the Destroyer, how is it that some of them were not destroyed? Obviously, someone lived to tell the story. And we'll get into that when we come back from the break. But I just find it thoroughly interesting that even if it was the Destroyer, some apparently lived through it. All right, we'll get to that when we come back from the break, and we'll find out what Marshall Masters has to say about the Destroyer or the Frightener. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Marshall Masters. Marshall, before we went away for break, I was asking that question. In the Colbran, this planet that we commonly refer to as Planet X or Nibiru is referred to as the Destroyer or the Frightener. What's the deal with that? Why do they refer to it that way?
Well, the term Destroyer really comes from the impact that it has and how it would cause so much devastation. It was not a total end of life, but it would really cause terrible amounts of fear. And the reason why the ancient Celts called it the Frightener was pretty much the same reason why the Egyptians called it the Destroyer. And actually, in some versions of the New Testament and Old Testament, the term Destroyer is used depending on translation. But what it really was referring to is the effect that it had on people. Women would become infertile. Men would become impotent as a result of the fear that they experienced.
All right. Now, what were they responding to? I mean, what were they seeing? Did they describe what they saw?
Well, in the Colbran Bible, they're really talking about the 10 plagues of Exodus. That's the point that we focus on. They talk also about the Great Deluge. The story there is the story of Susuta and Hanok, and it's the same thing. There, as a matter of fact, the Deluge story, if you look across the world, there's, according to some anthropologists, there's as many as 100 or more different stories. A classic case was when Cook landed on Hawaii, and began telling them about the Bible. And then he talked about Noah and the flood, and they said, oh, we know about Noah. We don't have an H on it. It says N-O-A, but they told him the same story. They'd never seen a Bible, but they had the story of Noah.
How did they have
it? This is part of this deluge knowledge that went around, and the deluge was caused by a flyby of this object, according to the Egyptians, and also the 10 plagues of Exodus. The thing to keep in mind about the destroyer, which is also for those of you out there that know about Nibiru, it's all the same. I mean, there's many different references to it because there's so much history to it. I mean, when I see these self-appointed pundits and debunkers going, well, this is just some, you know, viral topic that popped up on the web, it's nuts. Because there, one of the reasons why there's so many names and there's so much information out there is because it's really, really, there's a phenomenal amount of knowledge out there. And people have been talking about Planet X from the 70s. I mean, we have prophets, we have Catholic seers, we have a whole range of prophecy, contemporary prophecy, where it's the two sons prophecies. So there's a lot of this information out there, and it's just filtering up to the surface. People really don't know about it until things clip up. I mean, stop to think about 9/11. How many people really knew where Afghanistan was?
Well, for that matter, how many know today?
Now? All right. So the knowledge is out there. The question is what provokes you into tapping into that knowledge?
Well, I guess what I'm kind of curious about is, you know, I do understand, for instance, when Halley's Comet comes by, there are people that are awestruck, but I'm not, and it's hard for me to imagine being awestruck. What is it about Nibiru or Planet X that had these people so frightened that they became infertile?
Because it's tearing up the world. It's causing an incredible amount of damage. You are having a major body that's coming into the system, interacting with the sun. You're having, if you're passing through the tail, you have massive meteorite showers, which is what we believe happened during the 10 plagues of Exodus, that whole thing was triggered by massive meteorite showers. So it creates a whole scope of natural global cataclysms. And that is frightening. I mean, you know, if you see a wall of water coming at you and you're going, oh, I don't know, maybe, you know, what the heck, let's stick around and see how this works out. No, you're going to be screaming at the top of your lungs and heading for high ground and going, feet don't feel me now. All right? So that's, you know, that's the fear of this thing. That's what they're trying to get across to folks. Is, hey, wake up. Here are the harbinger signs. These are the things that are going to be happening. And when these things are happening, you got to watch out because this monster is going to come rolling through and it's going to create all these natural disasters.
All right, so I would take it from what you're saying that this planet passed close enough to not just be a pinpoint of light in the sky, but was something fairly majestic in the sky, so that people who are not astronomers are noticing that it's there, and it's creating all kinds of havoc here on the Earth, earthquakes and volcanoes, I guess, and who knows what all else, tsunamis. So they were associating all of that global change with this thing they're seeing in the sky. Do I have that right?
Yes.
All right. Now, you've done a lot of study and you've written about this Planet X, this Nibiru. Is this thing real? I mean, is this a good story from ancient times, or is this actually real, and is it on its way?
Well, Kevin, let me be just kind of blunt about that. We've been stating our position about this for many years, and I'm really not even interested in answering validation questions anymore about does it exist or doesn't, because our audience, the folks that we talk to principally, get it, want to get through it. This is not about does it or doesn't it, do I have a smoking gun or don't I. It's about when, at what point do you have actionable information. And so we're really focusing our efforts at Yowza at talking to people who consider the information to be actionable and they're doing something about it. Because in the final analysis, uninformed people in a global cataclysm die in greater numbers, die much faster, and those that don't die are far more malleable and also more likely to succumb to after events. That is the fact reality of it. And so for those people that want to say, well, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, and I choose to be uninformed today, then my message to you is it is a global tribulation. Global tribulations are about a lot of people dying, and the uninformed are going to do the bulk of the dying, so thank you for standing up. Frankly, if you want to be dumb, eat, drink, and be merry.
All right, now,
rather someone who gives a damn, survives this thing, and gets through it than people that want to take pot shots.
All right. Well, the reason I asked is not for validation, but the reason I asked is, and you answered it, is that apparently, from your point of view, the information is real enough to be actionable. And so let's talk about action now. Where do you think we are in the progression of Nibiru? Let me explain the question a little bit better. Assuming that it is close, when do you think we will begin to be able to see it?
Well, we believe that they are already observing it and have been observing it from, you know, with spaceborne telescopes and from the SPT in the South Pole. It's the first official announcement of this object will probably be from the Wormwood Observatory in Learmouth. That's in the northwest corner of Australia. So when they do name it, they'll probably name it Wormwood whatever, because generally when observatory finds something, it's named after the observatory or whoever discovered it, the astronomer.
All right, I've got a comment and a question. I'll do the question first.
Okay.
Why that observatory?
Because of three reasons. One, its location, the object's coming up from the south. Two, is that the function of that observatory is to look for near-Earth objects that threaten the Earth. And three, is it is an infrared facility. And right now, Planet X is visible in infrared, but not in visible light.
All right. Now the comment. When you said that, my mind, all kinds of bells went off, because there is a prophecy in Revelation about a destructive collision with something they called Wormwood. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. That's the reason why we believe that. One of the things that we believe will happen is that events will be made to parallel prophecies in the New Testament. So it would stand to reason that Learmouth would be the one to release it. Learmouth would be the one to name it, and it would go that way. But Kevin, the bottom line is that all of this is beside the point. because when we're all standing out in our backyard pointing up the sky and crapping our collective pants, the debate's over. And if you really haven't figured out what you're going to do about it by then, it's too late.
What do people need to be doing?
The first thing people need to be doing is to first sense their own awareness and let that awareness lead them to knowledge, to go research, to become self-informed, to find the information that resonates within them, all right? Not mm-hmm. what somebody tells them to think. Anyone that follows someone that says, here, this is what you're going to think, and you go, okay, I'm just going to do that, well, then you're not a sentient being, you know? You're a little monkey with a cup, okay? The point here is people have to think for themselves. What this whole event is going to be about is free will. It is going to be about personal choice. It's going to be about what you do. And so all we ask people to do is become self-informed. Gather the knowledge from all the sources that you want. Everything, wherever you lead, go to it. And multiple sources. That's important. You want to get a broad amount of information. There's a lot of it out there. And then when you have all this information, digest it, sort it out, and then whatever truth resonates inside of you is where you got to start.
Is this survivable?
That's what we believe.
Do you think the
documented flybys before were all survivable? And we're really in not only in a point of saying it's survivable, but our interest right now is in how do we mitigate it? When I'm saying mitigation, it's how do you take a worst-case scenario and turn that into a better-case scenario?
All right, Marshall, we have to take a break. And when we come back from this break, I want to talk about how to mitigate it and where you think we ought to be looking in terms of information. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Marshall Masters. Marshall, when we went away for break, I had said that what I wanted us to really delve into is you mentioned that you're interested in people knowing how to mitigate this. All right. By that, you don't mean nullify its effects, do you?
Well, I don't believe that we can nullify it in... This thing's going to come. I mean, this is monstrous big. But when I'm talking about mitigating it, what we're really looking at is you can mitigate things at a different level. You can add a personal level by becoming self-informed, by thinking about it, by contemplating what's happening, becoming aware of your world around you. But then you can collectively work with others. And if you mitigate things, what is on mitigation on a personal basis, okay? Well, where do you want to be when everyone that says, I'll cross that bridge when I get to it, they're all queued up on a three-mile line behind that bridge, and everyone's fighting to get on the bridge, and you're watching all this from the far side up on a mesa before you go off to safety. So where do you want to be? Do you want to be fighting to get on the bridge, or you want to be looking at this whole thing on the mesa before you move on? That's mitigation. That's how you change your own personal case. But also it's something where we collectively as a species could come together. I mean, if there's one thing I personally believe is that we do have, and physicists tell us about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, all right, by thinking about a thing, you can alter the outcome. That's a fact of science. You know, all you have to do is watch, you know, Jurassic Park. It's well explained in the first one. But if not that, you get the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? Or you go get The Secret. And this is really talking about us as human beings having the ability with conscious thought to affect an outcome. And I think if we collectively as a species, we could set aside all of our crazy differences and stop killing each other long enough to join hands and just say, hey, let's generate positive thoughts together to put a shield around the planet, maybe deflect this thing a little bit. The difference could be literally just changing where the object flies through the solar system. You know, we just put up a video, our February 2009 report with flyby scenarios. We have 8 different positions where Planet X could fly through the solar system, and one of it is extremely benign. We hardly even notice it. And another one is almost a certain extinction level event, where up to 90% of the species on the planet go extinct. Not the end of all life, but we're talking about an extinction level event. Now, there are those possibilities. Now, what's to say that as a sentient race, we say, hey, you know, we really do have the ability to affect the outcome if we collectively pull together and approach this spiritually. As enlightened beings, maybe we could in some way deflect the trajectory of this thing just enough to nudge it into a more benign flyby. So instead of it flying through a part of our solar system where it lays waste to us, we can push it aside just enough, nudge it just enough, that it doesn't do so much damage. That, to me, is what I call mitigation.
Marshall, I don't doubt that that ability exists. So what I'm about to say has nothing to do with whether we have that ability to change outcomes by conscious thought. But here's the question, and you brought it up. You said if we could just stop killing each other long enough to kind of join hands on this and work at consciously changing its trajectory. Here's the question. How realistic is it to think that we are going to be able to do that?
Well, I think that it's really going to be something that is going to happen partly naturally, partly through leadership. And if we're really getting behind it, when we're faced with it and we have to do something. You know, right now we can say, well, gee, how could that really happen? Well, take yourself back to 9/10. Could you imagine the whole country as it came together after 9/11 doing what it did? No. In 9/10, it was, dog eat dog, screw your neighbor, make a killing in the market. And then after that, a wave of patriotism, and we wanted to get close to Creator again, remember?
Yeah, I do, but that was after a great calamity, a great tragedy had happened. But as I understand what you're talking about is we're going to have to do this before this thing gets close enough to do all of these great calamities to us.
Not necessarily before. I mean, we can do this at any time. There's no rule that says when you have to do it. I mean, if you're in the middle of this situation and you're now faced with it, how you face that is a matter of free will. It's a matter of choice. If we choose wisely, perhaps we can mitigate it.
Well, I, for one, hope you are 100% correct about our ability to mitigate it, because everything that I have heard, provided that that this thing comes in as it has in the past, everything that I've heard indicates that it's really going to be a tough ride for everything living out here on the surface of the planet. What do you think about the idea of people moving inside the planet?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of in our book, Planet X Forecast 2012 Survival Guide, we talk about Arcs of the Chosen, and this is where there are the domes, the deep underground military bases 2 miles underneath the surface, and in one way of thinking, that's going to be safer, but in another way of seeing, those can get ground to pieces as well. I think that the most important thing is not physically where you're going to locate yourself. I think that you really have to be located. You need to understand, and this is one of the things I'm trying to get to people, is that this event is not going to happen to you. You are not going to happen to it. You are a part of it. When you understand that you are a part of it, then you're no longer saluting a flag. You're a thread in the flag. And once you're a thread in the flag, you feel every puff of wind. You sense all the emotions, good and bad, coming at that flag. You're at the focal point of it. And then you can do what you need to do.
You feel rather confident that this is going to happen, that this unity among people will happen?
Not all. I mean, we have to be practical. I'm not really trying to go out there and say, bring this information for everybody in the world, thinking everyone's going to get saved. Because really, statistically speaking, the number of people that we could help with our message, the knowledge that we're doing, is a grain of sand on the tuchus of a flea, on the tuchus of a dog, on the tuchus of an elephant being eaten by a dinosaur, okay? So, but you do what you do.
That's a lot of tuchus.
You either say every life is sacred or it's not.
And you feel like there will be significant numbers of people that will become involved in a conscious effort to mitigate the effects of this flyby of Planet X. You think it'll be a significant number?
I do. I see more awareness on this now. More people are... we used to paraphrase, the guy that wrote Dune, the sleepers are awakening.
Mm-hmm.
People are coming to it, and what they're looking for is not the things that they were interested in looking at. We've been writing about Planet X since late 2002. We've been there. And we followed the trends as the topic came and went, and this whole thing, when they say it's viral, it makes me laugh, because I remember back in 2003, the topic was so dead, you couldn't imagine how dead it was. But
I hate to break in and say, but we have a break starting, and our mics are about to go dead. So we'll pick up there at the other side of the break. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll open up the telephones for you as well, so you can call in with your questions or comments for Marshall Masters. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and in just a moment, I will open the telephone line so you can call in with your questions or comments. But I want to get Marshall to complete what I had to. I had to cut you off. You were talking about a time when the subject was dead and people weren't even talking about it.
Yep. And by the way, let me say to your audience, and because I'm sitting here and we're having to adjust for audio, I'm having a little audio problems here with some feedback. And so I'm spinning on this little thumb wheel all night here. And if it's if it sounds like I'm walking over your voice, I apologize for that. I'm just trying to do the best here.
All right, that's fine.
The Give me the question again. I'm sorry.
Well, you were commenting on a time when you said this subject was dead. People weren't even talking about it.
Oh, let me tell you how dead was dead. I mean, when this was the 2003, and it was Mark Hazelwood and Zeta Talk, and people were really panicked. The Hazelwood book, Blindsided, was just scaring people terribly. And we even had Zachariah Sitchin on our site for an exclusive interview, and we were all saying, whoa, 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 not 2003, whoa, whoa. And it turned into a big non-event, and literally August of that month, we published an article, and we raised the question, is it time to take another look at Nibiru Planet X? In that first month after we released it, four people read the article. That was it, just four people. So I think at that point, Planet X as a topic was as dead as a doorknob. But it's the kind of thing that has legs, and it was not going to be suppressed or pushed aside. And interest came back and has definitely been picking up, particularly with Earth changes, and I think the watershed event that really brought it back to getting people looking at things certainly got our attention, was the Sumatra superquake of December 2004 that killed 250,000 people.
Yeah, now that certainly got a lot of people's attention. And but, you know, here's an interesting thing about that. That got a lot of people's attention, and yet now it seems almost, if you mention it, they have to think about it, and then they say, oh, yeah, I remember something about that. We have such a short attention span.
Yeah, well, I mean, people were that, but then again, on the heels of 2004, we had Katrina the following year. And I think it was, you know, that was like a thump, thump. And for a lot of people, it was a wake-up call. It was a coming to awareness where they're saying, you know, our Earth is changing in ways that are not really great.
All right, tell you what I want to do. I want to open up the telephone lines so that people can call in and ask their question or make their comment. I want also for everyone to know all around the world, if you have a question or a comment for Marshall and you're not in the United States, you're not in Canada, you don't want to make that international long-distance call, here's what you can do. You can go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. On the website, scroll down, and you'll see right under Marshall's picture, you'll see a link that's in green. It's the color is green, and it says flash message. Now, you have to be outside of the United States. You have to be outside of Canada to use that. But use that and send me your question or comment. I'll read it, and we'll get Marshall to comment on it if it requires a comment. Otherwise, folks, if you're in the United States or if you're in Canada, our telephone number is 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. And the telephone line is open. All right, let's go to the telephone. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin.
Hello there, Marshall. How are you doing?
Just fine.
Okay, I want to. I think I don't think this was brought up tonight. Mind you, I do have the audio, a condensed audio version of the Colburn Bible that Doug down in Central Ontario sent me quite some time ago. It's an amazing works, by the way. what I wanted to ask about is how do if you follow these or if you quote unquote believe in these entities, where the Anunnaki and the Nephilim fit into all of this, and if they do originate from Planet X, and whether or not they are here now.
Well, I think that, you know, that is something that
we see in our research. People talk about it a lot. But we're really focused on the natural aspects of it. One thing I would say that in any way, shape, or form, whether there is or is not Anunnaki, is that this event is really about how we come out of it. We're either going to come out of it as a slave species or we're going to come out of it as free species with free will.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that Nibiru may have been directly responsible for the destruction of Atlantis?
That's what the Colburn indicates, and you know, that was a previous flyby. That's the work that Greg Jenner is talking about. We really, in terms of the Colburn, we limited our study on two events, the deluge and the 10 plagues of Exodus, both which were flyby events.
Okay, and one last question. How much does your research tie into that of Zechariah Sitchin's?
I think that we've actually been rather fond of Zechariah Sitchin and the work that he has done on Sumer and Nibiru. And folks following that, it gives them a tremendous amount of information. It parallels it, but in the final analysis, Sitchin for us is a small component of our work. Our work is really, we're more focused on getting modern-day information that is indicating trends that are consistent with a large object coming in to the solar system. So we're really paying more attention to NASA and JPL than we are Sitchin.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, Kevin. The telephone line is open, folks. And the telephone number is 623-237-3814. You mentioned, Marshall, that you focus more on information coming from JPL and NASA. I think this audience is generally of the opinion that we don't get much information about this sort of thing from JPL and NASA. What about that? Do you get a lot of information about it?
You get the information, you just don't get the context. You know, it's like you have a great recipe for an apple pie, but if you don't know that you need to get cinnamon and apples and flour and whatnot, then you're not going to make the pie. Likewise, if you have the cinnamon and the flour, but you don't have the recipe, you're not going to make the pie. What we find is that there's a phenomenal amount of information that's out there, and we're just connecting the dots. If you follow our work, you see that we're consistently reporting back to information that they're making available, but we're not the only ones. Richard Hoagland did a great job of it, too.
What sort of information are you referring to when you're talking about information from NASA and JPL? Kind of give us an example. What sort of information do you get that's just kind of out there and not connected up?
Well, I mean, for example, in our February 2009 report that I have up on YouTube right now, we're introducing what Themis is talking about, the NASA Themis probes. And what they're finding is that Earth's shield, our radiation shield, is diminishing, and now it has a couple of very large holes in it. And without this shield that the Earth's core generates, we literally are the proverbial poodles in the microwave. And so NASA's reporting this information. The government's getting out a lot of information. There's some critical things that CORSET they're not going to come out with, but there's other information that's really of concern. And I think if people watch our February report, what they're going to see is how it's trivialized by the mainstream media. So I think the key thing here is not what the government is or is not telling us. I think the key thing, Kevin, is what the mainstream media is trivializing.
Oh, and they do. The mainstream media is itself trivial these days. It's drivel these days. All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Trey, Louisiana.
Yeah, Trey.
Hi, Kevin. Kevin, I can barely hear you, but I can hear your guest.
Thank you for telling me that. What's on
your
mind?
Then I'll hang up and then I'll listen off air.
All right.
I want to mention that you mentioned that you don't pay attention to Sitchin's work, and I understand that. You're trying to actually find and, you know, look into our solar system and pay attention to everything that's going on up there, with all, because there's plenty of it going on. But I want to say this is, I was just thinking, because y'all mentioned wormwood, and, you know, Kevin, that's from the Bible, and maybe after I hang up, you can tell us where the word wormwood comes from, or do we even know why it's called wormwood? But I was thinking, there's William Henry, and William Henry is almost like a modern-day translation of what he's done, and says from all the translations that he has, it's a serpent rope or a wormhole is going to be opening up from the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And let me ask both of you, well, I mean, how many words do you have that has worm in it? I mean, what are the odds of wormwood and wormhole? I mean, you got William Henry with the wormhole theory, and you've got wormwood in the Bible. There's not a lot of words that have worm in it, is there? But anyway, I'll hang up this one off air.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Well, why don't you take the first stab at that one, Kevin?
I really have never even thought about that. I do remember this. I do remember that when Chernobyl happened, the meltdown and explosion in the nuclear reactor at Chernobyl, I do remember that a bunch of evangelical preachers made a point of telling everyone that Chernobyl translates from Russian to English as wormwood. I do speak I speak Russian like a little child would speak Russian. So I am familiar with some of the Russian language, but I certainly am not at the level of being able to tell you that Chernobyl means in English wormwood. But I remember hearing and seeing that. I saw that on the internet, and I heard on radio and on television different people talking about that. I don't know how many words have the word worm in it. There is a place in Germany called Worms, and it's spelled W-O-R-M-S. So I'm really not sure, but I would not make a connection between wormwood and every other word that has worm in it.
Well, what I would say in on the Russian skills, Yatozha. But in general, I mean, where we try and keep our focus in, it's not that we ignore Sitchin. I think Sitchin has done a massively important job of bringing this information out and starting the ball rolling. And so we honor his work. We even promote his books from our site. But again, what our focus really is on is the observable. We take a very existential view of this, and existential being in the moment. We're not trying to validate a belief system. We're not trying to prove something else right or wrong. We're just going, what's happening? All right, what do we see happening out there? And that's what we go by. We look at what's the government doing? Where's the money going? All right. Well, the money is going right now. If there's not a massive object, that the sun's not going to become a lot more problematic, then why is all of a sudden ESA, NASA, JAXA, all of these space agencies are putting up space-based solar observatories as fast as they get these things out there? And the Hubble is being, you know, it's an old, that thing is old. It should have been scrapped. And same thing for SOHO. They both these projects are being extended. So whatever is old up there, they're going to keep it going until it finally drops dead on them. And meanwhile, they're putting up a lot of new spacecraft. They're saying, well, we want to do it so that we're going to be able to see if there's any impact of solar activity on space exploration. Well, I don't see them building a Mars rocket, so why are we doing all this? All right. one of the things that folks have to be aware of is that there's always the desire to find the simple answer. And that's not what you need to do. You need to be a little bit of a sleuth. You need to put this together and connect the dots, but look at it for what it is, not what you want it to be, not what you're trying to prove. Just look at things for what they are. And if you look at things, the signs are out there, the planets are all, anything with an atmosphere is perturbed right now. The sun, Michio Kaku, just came on Fox. We show this in our show, that the next solar maximum in 2012, they've underestimated it by a factor of 20, and I explain what that really means in this video. So, you know, if folks, if you want to get some background information on it, and just, you know, not a lot of hyperbole. I mean, we really like to just stick with things that people can bet on their own. This information is, I just don't like throwing this stuff out to people so that they can't say, I'm going to independently vet your information. You know, we have our findings. We have our conclusions. We say this is what we feel this information means. But what we do is we make a point of giving you that information, giving you those sources that you can go and, you know, explore that on your own, draw your own conclusions, because it's the process of exploring the information, the process of becoming self-informed, that is going to save you, because this is something where you are teaching your brain to think this through. And you are creating neural networks in your mind. It is the neural networks in your mind that are going to save you, not the facts, not all the conclusions, not who's right, not who's wrong. It is going to be the neural networks in your brain that you create through contemplation.
All right. The second part of his question, and we'll open up the phone line again and here in just a moment, but the second part of his question was that's mentioned somewhere in the Bible, and he wanted to know something about that. Well, there's a whole bunch of places that it's mentioned in the Old Testament. The word is used, okay, wormwood is used. But the place where it is mentioned in the New Testament is Revelation, the last book. It's in chapter 8, verse 11. Now, it's not because I have all this memorized. It's because I just looked it up.
Okay.
But what's interesting about this, Marshall, is the Greek word is absinthion. Absinthion. A-P-S-I-N-T-H-I-O-N. Absinthion. And they're not really sure why. They don't know where that word comes from. They don't know exactly what that word means. It's something that falls to the earth, strikes the earth, causes one-third of the waters on the earth to become rotten. Or it causes the waters to become absinthion. But they're not sure what that means. And there's no one who really knows why they translated it into English as wormwood. The theory is that whatever it is not good, and wormwood is not good. It's rotten wood, and so maybe that's why they translated it that way. But the Greek word is absinthion. Nobody knows what it means.
Well, it's you know, there's a lot of these ancient mysteries, but you know, when we looked at the 10 plagues of Exodus, let me kind of march your folks through 10 plagues of Exodus.
All right.
This is a comet-like object, and it has a tail. We pass through the tail. You're talking about meteorite showers. Now, there's two things that have come out of that meteorite shower. There's iron, and the iron in that meteorite shower is going to turn the water to red, and it's going to poison it. But also, there's going to be other elements in there that are going to cause algae to form. The algae are then going to generate microcystin, which is a very, very powerful toxin. It kills fish, frogs, everything, makes everything want to get out of the water. And it's so microtoxic, in enough concentration, it will kill cows and human beings. All right. So it poisons the water. These are the kind of things that you get in a natural event where you have a flyby of a large object like this.
All right. Doesn't sound like fun. All right, caller, no. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. I'm Janice, and I live in Yucaipa, California. I have a little bit of information on wormwood. It's Latin name. I know you mentioned the Greek name, but the Latin name is Artemisia absinthum. Now, absinthe is the liquor that's produced from wormwood, and in large portions, it can be very poisonous. And so this is another aspect, and in a lot of countries, it's illegal. You can't make it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's illegal in this country, isn't it?
The herb, this Artemisia absinthum, does make the water very bitter. And again, if you drink too much of it, it can kill you, and it will kill the fish and the waterborne life.
Okay, well, maybe that is then the origin of why they translated it as wormwood. The Greek, of course, the original text was written in Greek, and so
yes,
the
it was the actually it was written in Aramaic and then transferred to Greek. But
not
yes.
Revelation. Revelation was written entirely in
it
Greek.
It was written in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and it's absinthion. So
I'm
yeah.
Jewish. So
yeah. So it's that's interesting. So maybe whatever this thing is that's going to strike the earth and hit cause a third of the water to become unusable. Maybe that's why they called it wormwood, is because wormwood does that to water.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
All right. Are you a first-time caller?
And hello to Marshall, and I'll let you guys go.
Okay. Are you a first-time caller?
Yes.
All right. A little applause for you. Thanks for the call. All right, Marshall, we're just 10 seconds away here from break, and when we come back from break, we'll take some more calls and talk some more about what's coming. We'll be back, folks, right after this. We are back, and we're talking with Marshall Masters this evening. Marshall, when we went away for break, we were talking about this wormwood, but I'm not convinced that that's the same thing as this Planet X or Nibiru, because it talks, if that happens, if that prophecy turns out to be correct, and that happens, then it's talking about something that actually strikes the earth, and I'm not convinced that the earth would at all survive a collision with Planet X. Are you with me, Marshall? Well, I've got Marshall on the phone. I'm looking at the controls. It says he's here.
Oh, here I am.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't think that Nibiru is...
Kevin, with trying to connect the dots between Wormwood and Planet X, and what we're trying to say is that Planet X is going to... It's not going to come alone. That's what you have to understand. Are we going to directly impact this object? No, I don't believe so. There's nothing that in our research that indicates that. However, it's going to have a swarm of junk all around it, and that is what's going to cause problems for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it could be stuff actually that is that swarm of stuff around it, or it actually could be pushing something that's in our swarm of stuff. It could push it into us.
There's any number of possibilities, and I think that, you know, one of the things that we're really saying right now, especially in our last report, our February report, is that we're saying, let's look at the scenarios, but based on three different kinds of objects. It could be asteroid-like, it could be comet-like,
mm-hmm.
it could be a small mini-constellation, all right? So there's going to be different things. I mean, what the information that we have so far shows us is that something is perturbing the sun, and it's got to be large. And what it is, you know, we're not able to say because we don't have the fancy space telescopes, all right? But we are sitting there and gleaning the information that indicates that there's something massive and it's perturbing the system.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Wow, somebody's really trying to block out the phone lines. Hello?
We're waiting.
Hello?
Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, if you can hear me. I just had a quick question. Is it possible that maybe there's just a planetoid, rocky, comet-like that's going by, but is there really any kind of real substantial evidence that it matches up against the Nibiru stories in the ways that they're actually... Or is it more possible that maybe, like, UFOs could be visiting from random other places because it's such a huge universe, and with the fact that we've only been here, like, 4,000 years, 10,000 years, whichever, which is so small in life's history, what makes us think that we're so great that a planet would come around right at our millenniums and different things and stuff as if it's some kind of a big chorus, other than the fact that we're really special beings that these things are all timed with?
I don't think it has anything at all to do with...
And this is just a rocky planet that's going by that really doesn't even need to be connected to a name called Nibiru other than the fact that maybe it's just a rocky piece of thing out there. I don't know. I'm confused on it, so I'll leave you with that. Thanks.
Okay. Marshall, I'm not real sure I understood, but I don't think it's connected with us. It's just something that's in the universe. And the universe runs in cycles, and it's time.
That's it. I mean, this guy is attaching all kinds of judgment to it. And who are we to think of this and whatever? And it's, you know, we're really not interested in attaching all of this judgment and all of this filtering and all of this validation of personal belief systems and whether or not we're worth spit or we're not worth spit as a species. We just really are a bunch of geeks, and we're looking at data, and the data says there's a big honking rock out there or a big honking something, and it's going to create hell. And there is a historical proof. We've got a lot of folklore out there, the Colbran, but also the ancient writings of the Sumerians is translated by Zachariah Sitchin. And, you know, what I would say to your listener out there, the fellow that just called, is, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to fritter away what time you have to become truly informed and so that you can cope with this situation? Or do you want to wait until everybody's standing out there in their yard pointing up at the sky and crapping their collective pants and going, you know, that looks like about a bunch of these other little things I was thinking about. Anyway, where do you want to be with this? Okay, wake up. Wake up.
Now,
it's either actionable or it's not. If you want to speculate it, go eat, drink, and be merry and get lost.
All right, now...
Sorry to get mad, but I am so tired of this. I've been dealing with it for years, and people... You know, Kevin, I gave you the interview because you and I are old buds,
mm-hmm.
all right? But otherwise, if people check my media site, I'm not giving interviews anymore because... We're really talking to people who are very intelligent about this. You would be surprised who's really coming to us for information these days. And we're talking about very successful people. And we're dealing with folks who have the wherewithal and the common sense to quit out the idle speculation and the nonsense and the garbage and to say, there is data here, it is actionable, and I need to take normal precautions.
Now,
and that's where they're at, and that's the reason why I'm talking to those folks. But in terms of this kind of conversation of, well, you know, Planet X could be the hoochie-coochie scratch all of the universal crack or whatever, I mean, I'm tired of that. You get it, and you want to get through it, and if not, God bless you. Sorry to get mad, but I just kind of, you know, I'm at threshold with it. I told you I was not doing validation stuff anymore.
Yeah, but here is one thing, though, that I have to keep in mind, because, I mean, look, let me give you an example. I mentioned the other night, actually, one of the guests mentioned Project Paperclip. And I had a caller who had never heard of that and thought that Wernher von Braun invented electric razors. Okay. But right. I also got a bunch of email. I don't know. I say a bunch, three or four emails similarly over the next 24 hours where people had not heard of it. And what the deal is that there are people who are waking up, but they're not up to speed on the information. So they don't know yet a lot of the information that we take for granted. But having said that, folks, if you look at my website, scroll down right there beside Marshall's picture, it says visit website, and that's a link. If you click that, it'll take you to his website, and on his website, are listed a whole bunch. There are a whole bunch of videos that you can watch, and that'll get you up to speed on the information. And I have to say, I've watched a bunch of those, Marshall. And they're excellent.
Glad to hear that.
Really excellent, well-produced. And when we say that this is actionable information, there's also this aspect. Okay, if you take the actions to be prepared, and then it doesn't happen. So what? Good. It didn't happen. And you know, you haven't lost anything. If you don't prepare, you don't take whatever actions you can to be prepared, and then it does happen, you're cooked.
You know what would be my ideal of the most perfect outcome?
What is that?
Is to be ridiculed by every jerk debunker in the universe. Their attacks and all the ugly things they would say would be honey in my ears. That would be the sweetest thing I could imagine. I would love that kind of abuse. I'd love 2012 and Planet X and all of this not to happen, and I would love to be abused for just sitting here and trying to say to people, hey, maybe you ought to take a look at this, because then nothing would have happened.
You know,
that's what I would love.
Marshall, one of the things that I say often is you can stand on the beach and shake your fist at an oncoming tsunami and say, you're not moving me, and you'll die. Or you can get your surfboard and be ready and hopefully ride the wave. Or if you have time, as you said, you can head for high ground and say, feet don't fail me now. But the point is, what if you have your surfboard and the tsunami doesn't come? Great. Not a problem. If you don't have your surfboard and the wave comes, and you don't have your surfboard, you're done. You're just done. You don't even have a chance. So I don't think there's any reason for people to live in fear.
Kevin, to take your point one step further, if you don't, it's not that you have a surfboard or you don't have a surfboard. It's do you know how to surf?
Yeah, you got to do that. I'm assuming you know how to surf if you have a surfboard. you got to know how to use the thing. Now, I don't think people need to be living in fear over this.
We don't say live in fear.
No.
But what we do say is that live in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, there's a cognitive dissonance is a great way to stay comfortable in your life. You don't have to consider things you don't want to think about. And it's, you know, it's one of the reasons why I'm just kind of weary of talking to folks that really haven't come up to speed on it yet. There's a lot of information out there for them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we just had Jacko van der Warp was at the first Planet X convention in Rome this month. There were 350 people attended. These are people who are physicists, doctors, accountants, insurance people. We're not talking about, you know, this notion that folks who talk about Planet X are a bunch of, you know, truck stop waiters. No, I mean, and that's not to disparage them, because those folks are sending me some really good information. They're with it. And those guys that are riding the long haul can think for themselves. But there's a lot of folks that just don't know how to think for themselves. And when we were doing this thing in Rome, people weren't there saying, does it exist? What they wanted, the information they were there to get from the panel was, we get it. How do we get through it?
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. This is Ryan up in Washington.
Hi, Ryan.
I just had a quick question, and I'll take it off the air, I guess.
All right.
Does it say anything in the ancient text about the economy collapse where the Dow Jones is now approaching 7,000? And I just want to see if there was anything in there about that. And what did you think about Comet Lulin? I understand it's by Jupiter now, but when it comes close to, when it comes across the Earth, we might see some weather changes because of the effects of this backwards comet.
Okay, we'll get Marshall to respond to that when we come back from this break. Ryan, thanks for the call. Folks, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back. Marshall, you want to address those comments and questions that Ryan had just before the break?
Sure.
All right, the floor is yours.
First thing I want to say, Ryan, I like those kind of questions because you're actually looking out there and you're looking for what's happening now in our solar system. And you're asking, how does this relate to me? And with this comet, we need to follow it. We need to see what it's going to do as well as other objects. This, whatever we're looking at, is there's a great deal of uncertainty here because we do not have, I mean, you know, you're not going to go on the cable TV and they don't have the Hubble channel. Now, we paid for the Hubble. There's no Hubble channel. We can't dial in 24/7 and see what's coming through the lens. We should be able to, but that information's filtered. And so what we have to do is just rely on the crumbs that fall off the table. And I think that we follow this. We follow every lead. You just stay after it. We are at Yowza. We're a very small group. There's just three principals. And what gives us a force multiplier effect is that we have an awful lot of folks out there who are asking the same kind of questions that your last caller was asking, and they're digging for things and they're passing on to us so that we can connect dots.
Why do you think
and
we don't
have...
this is
the very survival skill that we're trying to encourage people to do.
Why do you think we do not have a Hubble channel?
Oh, do you really want to go there?
Yes.
Okay, well, we have 6.5 billion people on the face of the planet. There's only so much to go around. Right now in Haiti, they're eating, I think, something they call bonbon terre, mud pie. I'm serious. I'm dead serious about this. They've defoliated Haiti And now what they have left is mud, and they're eating the mud. The children are eating mud to keep their bellies full. All right? We don't see that on television to wake us up to what's happening in the world around us. Not on Fox, not on CNN. What we see are, unfortunately, dead white women. Okay? Because we're being dumbed down. Remember when I said in the beginning of the show, uninformed people die in greater numbers and faster, and those that do survive are more malleable and likewise more easily succumb to after events. Okay?
So you think this is on purpose?
If you're not prepared for something, spiritually, mentally, physically, if you're not prepared for it, you're going to be just sitting there dumbstruck. You're going to be in a sense of shock. You're not going to know how to cope with it. And that's when, you know, that's when you take the wrong walk.
Well, it sounds like you're saying that somebody wants us to die in great numbers.
That's just, it's not that we're trying to wake people up, huh?
Well, it sounds as if what you're saying is that there's someone out there that wants us to die in great numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say this, but to me, this is more of a convenient eugenics event.
Who is it?
It's reducing global population to more manageable numbers. Go, you know, just tell your listeners, go research the Georgia Guidestones. You want to wake up to something? Go read the Georgia Guidestones.
Well,
that tells you those who have the idea of where this world's going to be, that's what they're planning. And what they're saying is basically to reduce the global population by 85%.
So
how convenient it would be to say, gee, we're not the ones killing you. It's that big thing up in the sky.
Okay, so let me connect some dots here because we're running out of time.
Okay.
It sounds like what you're saying is that there is a group of people who know this is coming and know it's going to be catastrophic and want us to be exposed to the catastrophe. Is that what you're saying?
I think that there's a group of people that are controlling events. That they're deciding, you know, I mean, this is right out of James Bond, you know. Machiavellian sinister guy is going to eradicate life and decide who lives and who dies for the betterment of the species. I mean, the folks that are doing it are deciding, they feel competent to decide who's going to live and who's going to die and who's going to repopulate the species, you know, but that's plain God. And the point here is whether what they're doing to me is irrelevant. It's neither here nor there. It's not good, not bad. It is just is. I don't view all governments as evil because I see the people that are really paying the heavy price for getting information out are inside government, and they really do care about helping people and serving people, and they're conscious. They're in a conflict of conscience, and they take a terrible beating when they come out, and they blow the whistle. So, and these are the people that are do more to inspire us than anyone else. But it gets back to you as an individual. What are you going to do as an individual? What choices are you going to make as an individual? Are you going to wait for somebody else to hand you all this in a pretty little box with a bow and you can decide it's a smoking gun? Because if you're going to do that, you're not going to be ready for it.
But well, there's also this, Marshall. People do need to realize, if they're waiting for the smoking gun, that only happens after the bullet is fired.
That's right, and there's a body on the ground.
Yeah, and it's too late then.
That's right.
Marshall, what's the most important thing somebody can do to get themselves prepared?
Become aware of the world around you. Stop. Be quiet. Look around. And start to think, what is, you know, connect the dots yourself. Let your own inner voice bring you to awareness. And then follow that awareness to knowledge in a way that is meaningful to you. That's what you have to do with this. I know it sounds simplistic, but this is what will give you the necessary tools, because the most important thing you could do right now is you got to program your mind for survival.
Your website.
No differently than, you know, people in the military will prepare for, you know, battle scenarios.
Okay, now your website has a whole bunch of links to videos, and people need to know they can either watch those videos at YouTube, because you have YouTube links there, or they can join your site and watch them in high definition and watch them in I guess a good way to say is they're not going to be competing with the rest of the world at YouTube to see the video. Sometimes you can't get a video to queue up at YouTube. Plus, the video quality is down quite a bit. But you can't get them to queue up because there's so many people watching them. And you have to wait.
Right.
If they go to your site and they join your site, then they can watch them in directly from your site in high definition. Again,
correct.
Folks,
we use DivX, so it's razor sharp, streams very nicely.
Okay, and folks, the link to Marshall's site is on my site. All you have to do, go to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, you see Marshall's picture? Right beside it, it says visit website, and that is a link. You can click on that. It'll take you to his website, and then you can watch these videos. Marshall, I want to thank you. I did read that you were not doing the interviews anymore, and I was surprised when you accepted my invitation. But I am also, I have to say, pleasantly surprised, and I thank you for being here with us. Stay on the line with me for just a moment. All right, folks, that's a wrap. Not only for tonight's show, but for this week. We've come to the end of another show and the end of another week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want, just as long as you keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.